Welcome to the show, all. I'm your host, Cam, and as always, got a jolly great guest, Stephen Honeycutt, audio drama producer and podcast creator. Welcome.
Hey, happy to be here. And I've never been described as jolly before, but I'll take it.
Yeah, jolly good. So I just knew we were going to have like separate episodes, even dedicated all sorts of other B-movie guys. And we're still long overdue on a Roger Corman or even a Jim Wynorski and Fred Olen Ray one. It's coming. I just don't know when. The closest we did is we did have a just cult filmmakers where we were just like, okay, here's some wacky guys. This is all just throw them out. But of course, if anyone's going to cover their work, they still need an actual like essential episode summing up their pros and their cons and their appeal and why they have any kind of audience. And
sure,
you know, we got one coming for Tommy Wiseau, don't worry. But
he's in a league of his own. He's just a guy who just made one movie that like took the world by storm. I mean, yeah. Those other guys have a body of work, but like,
let alone under different names.
And some of them are even still working. And you can also, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like direct friends with them on Facebook, but I'm in Facebook groups where a lot of those filmmakers just randomly hang out, just like they're normal dudes. Like
sometimes they'll even speak their mind saying, hey, don't you dare talk shit about my movie.
Fred Olen Ray just seems, based off my interactions with him through Facebook, just seems like the nicest guy. I've heard Wynorski in person, or at least on set, is a complete fascist, basically. I haven't really interacted with him too much through the internet.
I tried to interview him, and yeah, he was like, I only do paid ones. I'm like, fucking bullshit. I've seen you do so many freebies for your homies. So
he seems like the type who would be that way.
My one pal from the Schlock Pit, we had him on. We were talking about the dentist movies. And how those kind of seemed like the last kind of dose of the 90s films, which, you know, wherever they were going, you know, festivals, cable TV or what have you, they were just well filmed without any unprofessionalism happening on set or utter bullshit. And
right,
it seemed like we started talking about how it seemed like some of these filmmakers seem to just kind of almost feel like they're, what's the word? We got a multiple persona.
They become multiple personality disorder.
But there's a specific one. Why do I not remember it when I use this fucking word all the time? Yeah, schizophrenic or
something. Oh, okay, gotcha.
There'd be times where Fred would be like, "Oh, I don't like that," or "Oh, I don't mean it that way." And Jim, I would see him pop up in some places. And when people were talking about his movies, he's like, it's not softcore porn. I'm like, it's totally softcore porn. Even the actors in that say it on their resume. What the fuck did you think it was?
Right. Yeah.
But it was like, or it's a creature feature. And it'd be so funny how, you know, but yeah, the Schlock Pit invited him on. And he was like, I'm not going to be on that because it's, you know, Schlock is in the title. And then what do you know? A month later, he's on a podcast called Bad Movie Podcast. Oh, it's like, God. Well, so are you just...
Yeah, depending on the day. Like to, yeah. Who knows which version of Jim you're going to get.
Yeah, so very much like he talks smack about some of these actors, I do wonder if half the time when he's working with somebody, if he's in a certain mood or not. Because, yeah, it is so funny how all these other filmmakers just, you know, are only as good as their movie or their set. And half the time, I don't know if he's just stuck up or if he's asking some inappropriate shit or whatever, but I think he's a cool guy, but he's also at the same time, just anal retentive at it, depending on the mood. And this is a good segue here. I noticed he did something for B-movie actor and soap opera star Andrew Stevens turn, you know, producer at Franchise Pictures. And it seems like Albert Pion started on it, and, you know, it had people like, you know, the one famous rapper from
Ice-T.
No, not Ice-T. It Master P. And it was just so funny because it's like, I think he started off this is like the director. And then Winorski took over and made a totally different movie.
Let's see.
And I'm looking it up. It's like called Bad Business or something. And they even used like footage in like another one of those same shitty movies.
And this is like a Master P produced joint, or
I think he's just heavily featured, even though he's literally only in two scenes. And the rest of the time,
have you ever gone on Tubi and like see how many movies star like DMX and
like absolutely just, and
yeah, like rappers from 10 half the 15 time years
you're
ago.
Looking at them and you're like, I remember when that was first at the video store back in 98 2000.
Well, I mean, there's even newer stuff that I'm just like, wow, yeah, they're still doing it. Like, I've never heard of some of these.
Want to be really meta, I knew a pal who made this really shitty vampire movie that is basically about that and prostitutes, and it barely features either of both. And I knew him back in 2013 when he wanted to make this piece of shit. And he just now came out with it, made this movie for basically peanuts. And one of my pals was in it playing a detective, and he literally told him to kill his character off. He was having no fun. It was boring.
Oh, wow.
But I'm like, it's a Tubi original. I see. This fucker feels so special, doesn't he? But
Hey, at least he made it. At least he completed his feature. That's one more feature than I have completed, I'll say that.
I mean, if he can feel like he did anything at all.
Right.
So Pion is interesting because he just worked for like just Canon Films and the Remnants 21st Century. And then, he works for Franchise. He works for like Sony, and some of these movies show up on HBO and Lionsgate.
That's probably how I found out about them. Like, my parents were too cheap for HBO. For whatever reason, we had a Cinemax, and I swear.
It's all good. I had bootleg cable growing up, so I encountered all kinds of shit one minute. But I never really knew what was quality anymore, since I got into that mode where it's just like everything just kind of all looks like it's something that belongs on Spike TV or TNT or USA Network. It's made, every other movie looks like it's either 10,000 or 2 million, depending. It's just a matter of how it ends. Is it all for nothing, or is it just bizarre?
I feel like, though, all right, amidst all the direct to video or direct to cable like action movies that was on Cinemax, I do feel like the films of Albert, how did you pronounce his name?
Pion.
Pion. I guess I've never heard anyone actually say it before.
I think you're right.
Pion. Either way, like, I feel like his stuff is a cut above in the way that it's got like more of an energy than most of that other stuff. I feel like a lot of those others were, you know, probably just done for a paycheck, like direct, you know, just, hey, we're going to make this thing. It's going to go direct to video. I'm going to cash my check and go home. Where I feel like Albert actually cares.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
When I had Kaya Sayanada, director of Talking to, One Night in Bangkok, Zero Tolerance from 2015 with Scott Atkins and Dennis Yen, and Ballistic X versus Severon.
You interviewed him? That's impressive.
He was fucking awesome. He was really cool, sweet man. And I even kind of told him, I feel like you're kind of treated just like Pion. And he's like, who's that? I'm like, have you seen Cyborg and all these? I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that movie. And I'm like, literally, they both kind of had a similar career where they had all these ideas, they had the education, they caught someone's eye, and then each time just kind of taken advantage of by producers, shady investors, treated to racism just because they're Asian. They're just like, oh, you can only make kung fu movies. It's just like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, that's a shame. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like Albert got to do what he wanted for the most part. I picked up like,
kind of made cyborgs and cyberpunk kind of active in the B movie.
Oh no,
scene.
Yeah, he's he basically created that, or not really created, but he was the like cyborg cyberpunk like genre.
He has a director's cut of just about everything. Like,
I saw that Cyborg director's cut.
I have it too.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't really think it added too much. Like, there was some stuff where I was like, oh, I don't remember that. But like, whenever he cut in like 3 extra seconds of like Van Damme walking, I was like, I mean, whatever. I guess you have the time now since you're older to throw that in there. But
he suffers apparently from like both dementia and MS.
I heard MS. I did not see dementia, but
this is like a more recent one in a Bulletproof Action interview. And that kind of makes sense because he does seem a little sketchy on some details that don't add up necessarily with like late 90s interviews.
Oh, but yeah. I mean, I've never heard him interviewed before, actually. I mean, I think only recently did I realize that, like,
they could be easily quoting an out-of-date GeoCities for all we know, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'm just saying, only recently did I even, like, sort of, did Albert Pune even, like, sort of show up on my radar? And I was like, oh, he directed that? I saw that. Oh, and that. Right. I remember watching that when I was like 12 and loving it. And
his signature is pretty much focus on close-ups and try to make something look like it's somewhere else, even if it's a green screen. You
know? Sure. Also, doing a lot with a very little. It seems like a lot of his productions get hampered by a lack of budget for whatever reason. On
Captain America in 1990, and literally they sometimes wouldn't even deliver the film reels. So to keep actor status up, he just basically told him and rolling, you know there's no film to be loaded, you know. Right. He just had to keep that mentality up, and he's had some duds, but I don't think they're ever to the point of where you're just like, I absolutely think you don't deserve what you do. It's like, no, okay, so the ones where he like filmed in like East Europe with Snoop Dogg and company, like where they're all hunting each other, and he basically made 3 movies out of them, Urban Menace and The Wrecking Crew. I was like, yeah, okay, well, whatever. That could have been better. But
so that, yeah, that must be his like later sort 90s, of catalog, 2000s. Which
they're very overexposed.
So. Yeah. A lot of the newer stuff I'm not familiar with, like because doing research for this, I found out that
I haven't seen everything he's done.
Right. Right. I found out that he did a sequel to, The Sword and the Sorcerer, which basically that movie is probably the reason why, you know, I even have like a podcast or I'm interested in genre music or genre movies to begin with.
Right.
Because all the way back in, I don't know, I swear I must have been 6 or something. We were at the video store. My mom was like, you know, pick out your movie that you want to rent. And I'm like, okay, mommy, I want Disney's The Sword and the Stone. Well, the video clerk mixed it up and gave me The Sword and the Sorcerer.
Oh my God.
And, yeah. And I mean, I didn't know.
How what do you was mix going. That up when it's rated R? It
I mean, they're just so, oh, look, there's an S. It says sword, close enough.
Where was this, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah. What's that?
Where was this, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, South Carolina. So okay. I remember
my Dallas, Texas blockbusters were born as fuck.
Well, this wasn't even a blockbuster because I mean, my Hollywood, you know, video. People have all this nostalgia for Blockbuster. Well, I remember a time before Blockbuster when, you know, we were going to the mom and pop video stores, which had a better horror selection, at least, than most blockbusters.
Vestron and Sony. And
exactly, yep. And then also, I mean, you know, Blockbuster, their prices were pretty ridiculous. I mean, I'm not sad that
in addition to the monthly, you know, neither. I hated the monthly fees, and then they just kept getting rid of stuff. It's like, why do I want to rent part 2 or part 3 when part 1's not even here?
Right. And plus, and
I can see this for free on Sci-Fi Channel or TBS next month. So no reason to rent this garbage.
And on top of it, they would edit movies. Like I remember it was written in Lloyd Kaufman's book for the, you know, Everything I Learned.
Yeah. Even if it was unrated, they would still be very picky. Sometimes they're like, I got a bad feeling about that cover. Don't care.
Exactly. Exactly. So I say, screw Blockbuster nostalgia there, people. You can quote me. But I do have a lot of nostalgia for video, you know, mom and pop video stores. It was
funny the first 10 times. And then by like 2000 to, I want to say, 07, unbearable. Like just.
Sure, sure.
No way to save money. And so I was doing more, again, just recording off of cable TV. There was always something obscure or more recent. And just played at 2 a.m. that I would come home from school and watch. And it got, like you say, just unfathomable on how, I mean, years before where we got to now with the physical versus digital war,
right?
It was like back in the day, it got to like, do you have time? Do you want to see it? Or is it better? Are you better off just buying it off of iTunes or Amazon to stream or physical and with the special features? Is there, and this is, Pion is even more interesting because he wasn't able to really even, he does all his unofficial like director's cuts. Like he's got a, I think a private screen of his original Captain America. And he keeps saying he's going to release a director's cut of Ticker soon. And
man, I want to see that Captain America director's cut so bad.
Yeah. And I feel like he's one of those, a lot of people kind of know him, but unless you just had cable TV, you didn't really always see him. So he was always kind of in my life. I saw Heatseeker was often played on Sci-Fi Channel a lot. Mm-hmm. And I knew about his involvement heavily with the Nemesis films, but it was only until recently when he was like confirming is like, yeah, it's part of the Cyborg universe. And technically Omega Doom and what's the other one that he did? Heatseeker are like part of his, or actually no, Knights are part of his, those are what he considers his official Cyborg trilogy. Yep.
And I remember seeing a Nemesis, watching it on late at night on Cinemax. And it's weird because like, you know, you're watching it, you're watching his films or one of those films that show up on Cinemax. And like, yes, you know, it's a sort of a B movie or whatever. But
I had
like,
the Blu-ray of it too, with various cuts.
Mm-hmm. But you're like, oh, I'm liking this. Like the action is good. Like the makeup effects are pretty good. Like Nemesis, I feel like had quite the budget, and I just rewatched it recently and I loved it. Like it was so good. Like I feel like.
Did you see the making of feature, which you can find also on YouTube?
Oh, I'll have to take a look at that.
They use some actual effects guys from T2.
Yep, in my notes here, yeah, I have that. I do feel like I don't really understand why Oliver Gunner was people's go-to leading man for a while there. He is not a good actor.
I love the dude, but he's a little limited. I feel like he could have been bigger than Van Damme. He just chose the worst kind of projects with like crappy sound and lighting.
I mean, and at this point, he can't even speak English that well. If I remember correctly,
like gently, his English has gotten in reverse bad, and it's kind of one of those, you kind of like him just because he's just positive and everything. All these other guys have gotten very extremely like radical.
Right, so political. That's what he's like as a regular person then, right? He's like a positive dude then, you're saying.
Yeah, and I actually kind of dug Sector 4 Extraction because it looked just as decent as what you might see on like a CBS action show. And
I just felt like Nemesis was good, like despite him. I mean, it was obvious that he was trying, for sure. but yeah, just while I was watching it, I was like, why was this the go-to guy? But I mean, other than that, I also liked Tim Thomerson. He was in there.
He was a badass as the bad guy.
Yeah, he's good in everything that like, he should have been the lead. Thomas Jane was in there.
Arjean Holden from the Beastmaster show, Brian James. So there's another Blade Runner connection. And but what gets me with this one, though, is for the longest time I would see on IMDb when Underworld first came out and there's a big explosive sequence where, you know, a character's like, uses her guns to like shoot a hole like through like a wall and then burst through it. And a lot of people who were like video junkies started creating a thread. They took from Nemesis.
Right.
And then, so it is kind of an underground kind of cult movie, even though it is, it's low brow, but at the same time, it's done with enough of a soul to where you don't feel like it's just mindless garbage. You really do feel like it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would love to see that on the big screen and or, you know, just have a Blu-ray copy. I want to get into physical media, but I just I had like a, you know, huge sort of collection that I accumulated like through the 90s. And then I had to move overseas and I was like, why am I saving all this crap? And you know, went to one of those you know, for a while there, they had those stores that would buy back all your physical media and then sell it. and yeah, I just pretty much did that. And I mean, I don't really, it was mostly DVDs. So, because I don't even think Blu-ray was even a thing when I got rid of it all. So I don't really regret it too much. I still have a few choice pieces here and there.
Where when you need it, it's at its best moment. And then when you actually want to see it, you know, you've long past that expiration, that interest, you know, so it's just like, yeah, just give it to the collectors, you know, they're going to make
sure. Of
it
anyway. Yeah. Yeah.
The out of print Blu-rays are even more annoying because they, like you say, even if you want to watch them, you still got to make time for them. And that can be a pain in the ass. And it's
right.
It's just funny how we are with the clicker now. It's just more convenient and probably at its best possible quality, as opposed to worrying about a DVD versus Blu-ray transfer.
Sure. But jumping back to The Sword and the Sorcerer, I mean, as I guess a six-year-old, I probably didn't really understand what was going on too much. But
it was one like thing, actually very well received.
It was the highest grossing independent film of 1982. Apparently I guess Richard Mall from Night Court was playing the sorcerer in the opening scene, but had a bad reaction to contact lenses and had to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And so it was just a stand-in with him overdubbing for the rest of the movie. But yeah, the thing I never forgot about that movie that stayed with me all the way to this current day is that triple bladed sword. Like, that is just the coolest prop, the coolest sword in, like, you know, sword and sorcery history, like, I think, at least.
Yeah, it's pretty cool with the harpoon and all. And
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it shoots out blades. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Like, that's why I like it. And that's why I like the movies of Albert Pune, because they can get pretty ridiculous, but they're memorable.
They're memorable, and they're also pretty well paced, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who hate his movies, I've seen some of them compare them to U-Ball. I'm like, no.
What? No. Oh, I will fight a bitch. I will fight someone.
Yeah, that's a chokehold, because this is like, you're talking about a dude who blames everybody for all the shit he conjures up and then tries to act like he knows more than everybody else. And then
Uwe Boll is a talentless hack. Like Albert Pune.
I've seen some student films that have more ambition, you know, because I can't get through any of his movies without pressing the fast forward button, because they are just so inept from lighting to music to everything. And even when he's not atrocious, he's still pretty cynical and unorganized. And
right.
With Albert Pyon, he's like just kind of, he kind of still puts some degree of professionalism in regardless of the production. And much like all these Olin Ray and Minorsky's guys, it is fun seeing some of his same actors reappear. And some of them are just, you know, models or voice actors who might not necessarily have a great presence, but you love, like you say, the ambition, the mentality of it all. And, don't get me wrong, some of the ones are very imperfect. Alien from LA is pretty annoying, even as a Mystery Science Theater episode, but I can understand why someone might have some cult appeal to that. And Tales of an Ancient Empire is interesting, because when I saw it, I was like, wait, this is a sequel to Sword and the Sorcerer? And I thought, okay, well, kind of makes sense.
Was it any good? I haven't seen it.
It really depends on who you ask. I felt,
what do you say, buddy?
Well, so I did not hate it, but I can't recommend it. It does feel very unfinished and a little staticky and confusing. And he claimed that he considered all these other people for it, including Cary Wuhar, Mark Dacascos, and Val Kilmer, Steven Seagal, and Christopher Lambert. And I was just like, so I think you've spent too much time trying to get investors as opposed to getting this movie competently done. And
right.
I have no deal with Kevin Sorbo as an actor, even though he is a prick in real life. Although I will say a lot of the actors looked very disassociated, like Star Wars level, like they're clearly on a closed off green screen. So they were,
oh no,
it was one of those, just like, it's a very tough recommend. So if it's on streaming, knock yourself out. I don't recommend you spend any money on it, but at the same time, this is where I was kind of neutral, because in college I was doing all kinds of B movies, and this went into my same type of repertoire because he was one of the many guys who worked on a weird sci-fi movie with the likes of Rutger Hauer and Ice-T. Mm-hmm. And
right. Yeah.
The Nemesis movies, I got discounted on Blu-ray recently. And, you know, I can't bring myself to watch them unless I know we're going to cover them. And I think they're interesting in that they have ideas, but they're just very self-indulgent and they just kind of lack that kind of knack, because like Nemesis was kind of the better version of Cyborg. And yet I feel like everyone owes a lot to explore all kinds of his movies. Cause I've seen Brain Smasher come up in cult comedies. I've seen, you know, I need to rewatch Vicious Lips and Dangerously Close, but those were interesting in that those were just like violent after school specials, basically, you know?
Yeah, I recently watched Dangerously Close, and all those Nemesis movies are on Tubi. I can't get into the sequels.
They're very annoying. And
yeah, they don't, like, the first Nemesis feels like a cyberpunk action film noir. And yeah. I don't like the other ones. They're just maybe
even more the one with the Wishmaster. You're just like, okay, you guys are giving your best performances, but they're just like very confusing Twilight Zone Star Trek episodes where you're just like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. It went off the rails. And plus even though I can live with Oliver Gunner in the first one, that the female bodybuilder in the other Nemesis movies, she doesn't she's tried her best, but just very doesn't limited. Really do it for me. Yeah, exactly. Very limited.
And even more bizarre sex scenes where you're just like, I'm not sure what to feel right now, but this is not
right. I mean, I'm glad I never got to one of those. no thanks.
I'm good. It's so weird how he has all these other guys who do kind of B movies for like Universal and Fox Home Entertainment, like John Stockwell and Don Michael Paul and Dangerously Close. But Doll Man is also kind of interesting, although I think honestly that and Arcade are kind of half his movies, because he apparently left halfway through production due to schedule conflicts and Charles Band shot the rest of them. But they're kind of cult movies in their own rights due to their cast and being kind of like Tron. And Doll Man, I kind of prefer the Versus movie, and I used to enjoy kind of seeing parts of it growing up. I went through it, I think, a few years back, and I was one of those where I was like, it's way better just shot than most of his movies, but there's still some dead space and annoying dialogue in between. So,
yeah, that's one thing I enjoy about most of his movies, is that there's at least fun dialogue, like some good one-liners here and there. Did you ever see Mean Guns? That's like one of his later ones that I remember.
I've seen so many shit on it, but that was like the one I saw mentioned the most, like on Amazon reviews growing up, back when it was a thing. And like, it was often one of the most cited, like fight to the death kind of movies. And much like,
how can you shit on Mean Guns? I mean, I'd
be surprised.
I don't really see how you can shit on any of his work, just basically because it's all done so earnestly. It's like it's never a cash grab, but I guess it just depends on the viewer.
I don't know. I really don't know. I find it so interesting though, how there were even people who would come up with Fred's saying, you know, did the Matrix take from this? It's like, I think they're just taking from what Pyon's taking, which is that kinetic kind of music video editing and
Hong Kong action. Yeah.
And everyone was even trying to do montages after seeing shows like Homicide and other, just like how comedy sitcoms would sneak in some fourth wall breaking and mockumentaries before it really became overblown. And I think he was just one of those, he got very creative, because all he had to do was just rent warehouses and take all these semi-known actors whose names meant something. And Ice-T, I've always just generally liked as a person and as an actor and rapper. And I just loved how he kind of just was able to kind of keep making a lot of these same movies that weren't much different than New Jack City or Surviving the Game. And Lambert, I pretty much also knew from just doing all these kinds of movies too, because it was like, he was another guy, he just never could escape the Fortress or Highlander mentality. And
right,
it's so funny how they're both in this and they're giving it some respectability, and at the same time you're accepting it as the B movie that it is. It's also kind of funny seeing how Tom Matthews from, you know, Return of the Living Dead and the Friday the 13th franchise, you know, keeps popping up in his movies also.
Yeah.
Norbert Weiser has pretty much made a living. I've talked to him on Facebook and he always jokes. He's like, what do you know me from? Do you know me from Schindler's List, or do you know me from Pyon's movies?
Right. Did you ever catch Down Twisted, which is also known by a different title, like The Treasure of Sierra something or other?
Oh, is that like that abandoned movie he did? Like he took over like Treasure Journey to the Center of the Earth or some shit?
No. Down Twisted is it's
I see it. Okay.
Yeah. A level-headed waitress decides to help her shady friend against her better judgment. She becomes a target of a deadly international gang of thieves who are after a priceless San Lucas relic, and a bumbling stranger helps her. It's basically like, you know, sort of high adventure, almost kind of like Indiana Jones-ish, but it takes place in like current day. And I don't know, they end up going to South America to.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the Albert Pyun energy is there. It's a canon film. I mean, I don't know about you, but
I love canon.
You know, yeah, there was that sort of, I feel like a canon renaissance a couple years ago because of those documentaries that came out.
It's like everyone can now admit that they liked it. And it's like, you should not have to admit, like even growing up, I knew that there were movies that were loved, even though they weren't award worthy. I mean, why do you think people turned out to the masses of something starring Jim Carrey or, you know, whatever? It's just like, you don't have to be top of the line. And I think a lot of people have become better aware of what a B movie is, how it can be on any budget, whether it's Alien or Terminator or.
Right.
And I mean, Spielberg, for God's sakes, has said, yeah, Indiana Jones are B pictures because we're referencing earlier 40s and 50s genre movies. And
yeah, serials. Yeah, more or less. You know, Lucas, he wanted to make Flash Gordon, but couldn't get the rights. So he made Star Wars instead.
There you go. And people made that and all those other ones. It's so funny. Right. It's reverse chronological order. It's like you have to essentially say, it's like you have to remind everyone that the audience is here and that they want it now. And unfortunately, a lot of people only want to bite the bullet and cash off of the success of other stuff. And it's just like, you're so not listening. So I've been meaning to see this one, but no, I haven't seen it yet. I've seen Dangerously Close, and I do like Carrie Lowell from License to Kill and Law and Order. So
it's good. You should definitely check it out.
I appreciate that. It's apparently on Prime right now. So
yeah, there you go. Although the transfer is not very good, if I remember correctly, because I think I watched it on I watched it on Prime also. But yeah, I mean, that's where. Thanks to Canon, you know, we got Cyborg and a lot of other Pyon films.
Isn't it funny though how we sometimes have to remind people nothing has to be top of the line. It doesn't have to be, you know,
it's got to be entertaining is what you have to be. Always. I mean, if you ask me, most of the MCU stuff, despite their budgets, they're B movies basically. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's there. They're not taking it seriously. It's all shot on green screen. I mean, it's like they're just B movies, like really expensive B movies.
Yeah. And isn't it amazing how everyone will mock anything else that has like way too many entries, like Expendables and Fast and Furious, and yet MCU, that's not a cash grab. I'm like, it doesn't need five different sequels. You just wrapped it up.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, you want to talk about earnestness. I feel like pre-Disney buyout, the films were a bit more earnest, and now they're mostly cash grabs
I loved Blade in the initial X-Men. And when it got to where, you know, everyone was just trying to do this, is like, no, trust me, give me any of the Punishers any day of the week. Don't get me wrong. The TV show's great, but those were also pretty earnest because they were trying to be their own thing instead of worrying about how many t-shirts and toys they sold. And
Right. It was definitely still referencing the original like comics. We got too many materials,
my dude. I know, because I am one. I get so sick of having to tell people, you know, that song existed before it was played on whatchamacallit.
Stranger Things.
Yeah, it's just like, right. I am so done right. with people now. Your parents sucked and felt it.
Yeah, for sure. But
like you say, these are very organized. They're very atypical casts. There's some that are so out of print. I haven't seen Deceased or some of the other ones. Like Left 4 Dead is interesting because it's like him playing around like as it's like a called horror Western, even though it's like an all black outlaw gang. And
yeah, I mean, I
Road to Hell is his unofficial sequel to Streets of Fire.
Yeah, I was reading, man. Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, before, I mean, I didn't realize he was still making stuff. And I've doing research for this interview, like now I have like a whole list now of stuff of his that I need to check out that I didn't even, you know, realize that he had done. yeah, definitely a good thing. I definitely want to go back, and I think I remember watching Nights again on Cinemax, but I don't think I finished it. That's one, I feel like they were really, you know, those catapults that stunt guys use to get launched around?
Yes.
I think, man, they were really getting their money's worth out of those catapults on Nights, if I remember correctly. What's some other? Yeah.
The Max Havoc movies were kind of annoying because those just felt like two different people. And apparently he was just a co-director on that. And I can't remember if I saw that or its sequel first, but I was just kind of more annoyed because it just felt like nothing really had to do with one or the other. There's one of them has Radon Chong and Dean Cain, and the other had David Carradine as like a bad guy who fights the hero, and women wearing nothing but bikinis. And I always just kind of was just like, you know, I typically like those over the top kind of fight to the death Bloodsport knockoffs, and
sure,
those ones I kind of was just like, meh, because like I've tried to find Ravenhawk and it's always like out of print as a VHS or an expensive DVD. And but see, that's the kind of cult movie you want to seek out, even if it sucks, because it's just beyond has, like you say, a twisted mind. A lot of people I know really like Radioactive Dreams because it's just a bizarre sci-fi survival movie. And
yeah, I saw that one on here. I've never seen that one before.
It's often been, I noticed, even embraced by even Michael Dudikoff fans. And Hong Kong 97 was a lot of fun. I just always would see that a lot growing up in college because it just had a high body count from Robert Patrick, and Brian James got to play a hero for once. Once again, evil Tim Thomerson, and he gets a cool fight scene with the Wishmaster himself, Andrew Devoff, and Ming-Na.
You know. Man, you love your Wishmaster, don't you?
I do. In fact, I'll support.
I love it. I've never met another.
It got me back into horror when I was getting so sick of all the torture porn and found footage crap, and I was just like, "See, horror has to be just suspenseful, and then you have all the blood and guts and crazy shit happening, you know."
Yeah, because I'll admit, like when Wishmaster came out in the 90s, which I feel like aside from a few films here and there, the 90s is really not a good time for horror.
Everyone was trying to imitate Seven or Scream, but
yeah, exactly,
forgetting what made him special. And it was just like, well, this is funny, this is like Gremlins and other monkey's paw mentality where we're trying to see what hits the fan. And all these people who should know better give it into temptation, kind of like Hellraiser, and but funny. Yeah, I'm with you. It got to where, or they would just abuse the power of the graphics and you'd have all this awful expensive effects. Or it's like, often if you wanted to sell me on a movie, I wanted to know if the effects have been done by Industrial Light and Magic or Stan Winston.
Right.
That was my forte growing up. I was just a big fan of Terminator and all those other B-grade films. And I loved how sometimes they weren't knockoffs. They weren't great, but they were still the equivalent of a fun Saturday morning cartoon in, you know, live action form. And half the time you didn't even really know where these independent movies came from. You were just kind of embracing just the fact that someone, like you said, went out and did it. And even if it got let down by questionable production value, it was, like you say, kind of fun to see just bizarre premise and just all these actors. I mean, Tim Thomerson is especially the most interesting out of all these actors Pion has used, because again, that's Jack Death from Trancers. Oh, and anyone else who's been around who remembers 80s HBO then remembers, like, yeah, that dude was a freaking comedian. And he just chose to be, in all these other movies, is like, people love seeing him play a detective, and he's funny even when he's not even trying to be funny at times, because he can kind of just have that kind of dry mentality where you're just like, I love this. This dude makes everything golden. He did a movie recently where he's like fighting all these vampires. It's from like 2009, mm-hmm. and it's different, but at the same time, he kind of does a few fun kind of nods to his Jack Death character. Nice. And the special features are a hoot. It's called Live Evil. Totally check it out.
Live Evil.
Okay. It's like a total, like, and he's done some other fun movies with that filmmaker, but it's just so hysterical because he's just talking to the special features. He's like, well, frankly, it was pretty stupid, but only I could do it justice. And I think Pion has that same kind of mentality. He's not working with just, you know, D-listers. He's also working with all sorts of guys who've been in the business for a while, and they love his style. They love how he makes movies dirt cheap in Hawaii and Europe. And he treats them all with respect. And anything that he's done, you know, it's really often always, I know often, more than often, we say, oh, well, it's just, you know, you're a hack or you're not good at your job. It's like, no, it's because they took advantage of him and violated his trust and locked him out of the editing room. Did you ever see, it's shortly after Mean Guns and the Nemesis sequels, he did Postmortem?
No, I did not see that one.
This was really underrated. I saw this when I was during the mega upload scene. I was getting into all kinds of bizarre, obscure movies. And this one was always one of those. It just looks like another, again, you know, Silence of the Lambs 7 type movie. But it's not graphic. It's a very interesting, suspenseful kind of adventure film with Charlie Sheen not playing Charlie Sheen. And I think my pal Matt Poirier, the direct video connoisseur, actually summed it up best. Is like, you see everyone trying to make something so atypical of what they're known for doing. And Charlie is definitely another one of those. Is like, he would star in anything
at that time. Yeah.
He came to theaters or not. He'd do sitcoms. It's all okay. No one cared. It all played on TV regardless. And this was just interesting because it had some interesting kind of nightmarish visuals, even though it's not really a horror movie per se, but I think it'll keep your interest just because the atmosphere that Pion does is so atypical of what he typically does. Like, because again, he had his spot in the sun there by, you know, with Van Damme fans with Cyborg and Sword and the Sorcerer being kind of the most beloved cult movies, along with the Conans and Beastmasters. So it is interesting how with these, you know, I can definitely recommend that one along with Mean Guns. But why in the hell do you think Ticker gets so much hate?
And I've never seen Ticker.
It's
cheap.
It doesn't have the best green screen, and Naz isn't much of an actor, but
I told you I missed out on a lot of those. I mean, aside from Mean Guns,
getting ready.
I missed out on his like later stuff with the other rappers and whatnot.
It's really not all that bad. It does have a cool cast. Peter Green from Pulp Fiction, Ice-T cameos as the terrorist leader, Chili from TLC. But this is definitely where I first recognized Jamie
Freaking
Presley.
Dennis Hopper and Steven Seagal?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Seagal. This is my favorite movie of his because, like, Executive Decision, he's not the star. And this was Sizemore before he became, you know, crazy. But this was bizarre because, like, they used some stock footage from a Jeff Speakman Millennium Films film and then spliced it in. But the rest was all original. And I actually kind of dug the suspense in this. Romany Malco, years before 30-Year-Old Virgin, is also in here. It's way better than you would believe it, especially with considering it started out as an 80s canon film. And it's pretty engaging. yes, again, the green screen could be better, but it's a decent speed Die Hard in a city type movie. You know, it's,
yeah, I'm looking at the trailer right now. It looks like a lot of
Joe
fun.
Joe Spano from Hill Street Blues and NCIS is the captain. Mm. It's pretty well paced and it kind of ends, but it's not like what they're describing where they're just like, oh, just so incompetent and bizarre. It's
I
like,
don't know. Yeah. I think
Seagal has done so much worse where he's not even in the scene, you know?
I just see all those movies of him on Tubi where you can barely even see that it's him. He's got like a beard and glasses and a hat, and he's in the on the poster, and like that's what he always wears, has a beard, glasses, and hat now, I guess, to like cover up the fact that he's, you know, not really in shape anymore. He
doesn't really want to be here. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
because Bruce Willis, people gave him shit before he retired, and I was just kind of just like, hey, like De Niro and Morgan Freeman, he's gonna pretty much do these in between the big ensemble movies he's gonna do. And Seagal is just like, I didn't find them any different than the ones Stallone was doing on occasion in between Expendables movies. And with Seagal, it was just like, why even bother? And Pyon, even when the budget isn't there, you do kind of get a weird voice. It's hard to explain because most people, like you say, are not gonna give him a chance. They're gonna just say that looks like a piece of shit, you know, on the cover.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah, he's got his style, and you can. It's almost like with you know, John Carpenter movies. If you like, if you're flipping by and you land on a John Carpenter movie in the middle of a scene, it's like you know that it's him just based on the cinematography,
the music, and like or just feel. You're just like, and people creep down like, the police station. It's probably a Carpenter movie.
Exactly, and I feel this sort of the same vibe with Albert Pyun for sure.
1000%. Well, it's been great having you on here. What do you have coming up that you'd like to promote?
Well, I mean, every Sunday on Obscurity Now, it is a YouTube/podcast show where we just talk about random movies, TV, and comics. Basically, we pick one and we decide if it should be, by the end of the podcast, we decide if it should be remembered for all of human history or tossed into the black hole of obscurity. We're currently talking about the, I don't know if you're a comic book fan or not, but it's like the 30th anniversary of Image Comics. So we're going back and reading like the original number ones, like
Youngblood. I will need you on to discuss the best adaptations of
it. Yeah, there you go. Youngblood and Wildcats and Cyberforce. We're basically doing all those and seeing if they hold up here in 2022. And we've done more obscure stuff like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Mantis TV show.
Nice.
Sam Raimi produced a TV movie. We covered that. And I mean, anything that's old and almost forgotten, I want to get around to doing Nemesis, just because I feel like the more people talk about Albert Pyun, then he'll hopefully get the recognition he deserves before he passes off this mortal coil.
Yeah, we don't need any of these fake hipsters doing the whole, oh, I was always a fan. I'm like, bullshit. You just want to do that just because he passed
off. Well, I just want him to get more money then, I guess. I mean, of course, you know, the last thing we need is more fake fans for anything. But I just wish people could see what you and I see when they watch an Albert Pyun movie.
Well, any of these B movie guys, instead of just being like, oh, it's so bad, it's good trash because it's not made for $10 million.
Right. Oh, I saw him make fun of it on Red Letter Media.
Right. Because those snobs can totally make a movie as they've shown they can't, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love Red Letter Media. I just feel like people who watch them, they don't get
it. Invite the rants as opposed to
right.
They're not actual cinema sins.
Yeah, yeah. They're not actual fans of the genre stuff like you and I are. They're just there to won't it be fun to take a shit on this movie?
There's that, and a genre fan's goal is to also explain if it appeals to only the cult fan base or if it applies to all kinds of audiences. That's right. What any kind of critic should do.
Right, right, for sure. I mean, and aside from that podcast, we were already talking about Ray Can't Sleep, which is the audio drama that I produced from like 2 years ago. And I'm also working on printing out my first comic, Escape to Earth. If you're a fan of genre fiction, it is about a thief from this sort of like prison planet who, while botching a job, he accidentally lands on prehistoric Earth, where he meets a woman who can control dinosaurs. And they basically have to work together to fight off like this security force who's trying to bring him in. So
fucking hey, this is dynamite.
Yeah, well, just just follow at Reptilian Media on Twitter. I'm constantly updating people about all of my projects, and hopefully the Escape to Earth will be available to buy in print form soon.
We will have you back, especially if you want to promote that. Let's do it.
Yeah, that'd be great, man. And plus, I mean, I just enjoyed this conversation anyway. This sounds like
this was dynamite, man. I did not know where this was going to go, and this got deep. This is great.
All right. Well, I had a good time too.
All right. Well, you stay safe out there, and don't let any of the creatures out there bite you.
All right. See you in the funny papers.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S., we are in the U.K., we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.